Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio. And
we are wondering what to do to get treatment for our sexual addiction. Well, there are lots of things to do, and I'm excited tonight to be talking with Michael Morton, who is the director of Keystone Center in Pennsylvania. You know, he's going to be talking about when do you do family therapy, who do you include. This will involve couples therapy. It will involve, you know, family members, kids, that kind of thing. So if you've got a family and you've wondered, you know, do I need to talk with our children? Or if you've got questions about who do you go to when you want to do the next right thing by talking to family members and discussing what we call the elephant in the living room, the problems that have occurred in your family that have caused lots of fighting and strife. Well, and I'm here to tell you tonight's show is for you. Because Michael and I are going to be talking about what does a family therapist do in an inpatient or an outpatient setting? And he's going to help you to determine what are the benefits of inpatient treatment and when is the best time to incorporate family therapy when treating a client with sexual addiction. This is a way to rebuild trust when you talk openly and honestly with family members. But I've got to tell you, it does require an expert. This is not necessarily a topic that anybody can talk about. So listen tonight and find out some of the guidelines. Who do you pick? How do you pick them? You know, what are considered some of the boundaries and limitations when you're working in therapy with a therapist and you want to talk about couples work or family therapy? And Michael did this for a living, probably still does. I know as a director he's dealing with more administrative responsibilities. But I have people that I've sent to Keystone, and they really felt like Michael was one of the greatest family therapists they ever knew. So this man has a wonderful reputation. Keystone has a great reputation. And you're going to learn a lot about hope, strength, and recovery that's out there in your community. Free to email me questions, and I will answer them all week long in regards to this show. You know, talking about sexual addiction can feel very scary, and that's why this show has absolutely opened up the dialogue as to what to do when you have sexual addiction and who to go to. I can't stress enough how important it is to get treatment from a certified sexual addictions counselor, because we have had lots and lots of training as to what to do with a client who says, I may have sexual compulsivity. And this can be rough. You know, it's a rough thing to discuss. It's not something you necessarily want to talk about. And then I got to tell you, what I know to be true is that it is such a delicate topic. I mean, it really, really is. And you don't know when to include the wife, when not to. You don't know how to help her or not. And, you know, I'm doing the standardized, the male's the sex addict and the female is the partner. But really, roles can be reversed. We've got a lot of female sex addicts, too. So you really need to work with a certified sexual addiction therapist so that you get the right help. You know, I really know that listening to this show for many of you may be the first step. And I can't emphasize enough how honored I feel that you're listening. I've got over 500,000 listeners, and you are here to make it right. You're here to do the next best thing. And it's scary, and we want to help you with it. So there is no doubt that it is important to see somebody who is certified by going to sexhelp.com. And when you go to sexhelp.com, all you do in your zip code, your state, your city. That's all you need to do. And when you do that, you will find out who is the closest available person to you. Now, so many therapists aren't allowed to do counseling via Skype or Zoom or phone coaching, but they can get you started. They can help you figure out what it is that you need to do. So, what I know to be true is if you don't have anybody that lives close to you, then by all means, go through that registry of certified sexual addiction therapists and find somebody's website and personal profile that looks like they fit what makes you feel the most comfortable. You know, I know my website's up there, and I talk about being not only a therapist but a life coach and wanting to take your life to the next level, because that's what we were taught, that's what we were trained, that the beautiful thing about recovery is that clearly when you're in recovery, you get to be the best person ever, and oftentimes that is way better than 85% of the people out there. All right, that's why it is so important to find somebody who has this specialty. You know, I was talking to a man tonight, and he was listening to the show on sober dating last week, and he said that show gave him a lot of healthy boundaries. He didn't know you were supposed to wait about a year before you dated again. And he was scared to continue to date, because one of the things that he knew is that he didn't want to mess it up. He wanted to be able to begin to date and do it right, and of course not objectify, and of course be able to have a relationship with somebody, even if it didn't go anywhere, that was respectful and that put connection put the right things in connection so that, you know, maybe the person you dated turned out he or she was just going to be a friend. Maybe this was somebody that you wanted to explore getting closer to. There are so many dating rules. There is no doubt about it. So many dating rules in general. And then if you're a sex addict, you really have to be careful that you don't go too fast. You know, so many people don't know whether they should talk about their sexual addiction background. They feel like they should by the first or second date because they owe it to the person. They don't want the person falling in love with them and then finding out they're a sex addict. And one of the things that I know is that you don't do that. You get to know somebody, 3, 4, 5, 6 dates, and then you gently talk about the fact that you've been in 12-step recovery groups and that you're working on some issues and you're trying to be the best person possible. And you ease into it, or as we say in therapy, you lean into it. And so, again, this show covers a whole variety of topics. So be sure to go to blogtalkradio.com/sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. You can get it through iTunes, or you can go straight to Blog Talk and scroll down and see the kind of shows that I've done. You'll really be amazed at the diversity of the shows. And now I have a special request. I'm going to be announcing this at the beginning and at the end of every show. There are a lot of professionals that don't believe in sexual addiction. And so I have compiled a list of sexual addiction radio transcripts that I have took the liberty to edit to make it more reader-friendly. And you can get that book by going to ebookit.com and putting in Sexual Addiction Wisdom from the Masters. It's only $9.95, and the entire proceeds go to AFAR, which is the American Federation of Addiction Research. And so we want more research in this field, and I have a pledge that we're going to raise $50,000, and so I've asked all my listeners to go out and buy the book. It's an e-book. Download it and get the best of the best radio interviews from people like Patrick Carnes, Alex Katahakis, Ken Adams, yours truly. I talk about defense mechanisms, Paul Harshman, Claudia Black. She helps partners who feel deceived, and she also is the guru for children of alcoholics, adult children of alcoholics. Barbara Steffens. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There are 12 different chapters on 12 different subjects, and, you know, I'm asking you to please do that so that you help out our community, so that not only do we get recognized in the field of sexual addiction, but also the big deal is that not only will we be educating you, which is so very important, but we'll be raising money so that we can get better treatment centers, we can do better treatment, we can learn more about the brain and brain dysfunction and this condition, and we can better the community so you get the best help possible. So again, you can go to Amazon, you can go to Barnes & Noble's, and the book is called Sexual Addiction, Wisdom from the Masters, compiled by Carol the Coach, or Carol Jurgensen Sheets. I so appreciate if you would do that. I want professionals to buy the book. I want my listeners to buy the book. I want my clients to buy the book. I want to raise $50,000 for research. And since we're the only show on iTunes exclusively about sexual addiction and partner trauma, I can't emphasize enough how honored I am to be working with you and what I need from you to help me do the work. It is so important what I've got to say about that. We can all do our part, and that's what this is all about. The experts that call in on the show on Monday night, you know, if they are Pacific Standard Time, okay, well, they're calling at 6 p.m., right at dinner time. And if they're Eastern Time, they, like myself, are calling in at 9, 9:15, 9:30. This is a labor of love, and it's all about you. It's all about your partners. It's all about your families. We want to give you the best information out there. So please go out and buy the ebook and tell all your friends in the 12-step community. It may not be SAA approved, but it is certainly, certainly educational. And I guarantee you, I promise you, that you will know more about this illness and the treatment out there if you do that. Okay, this is Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I can't emphasize enough how important it is to listen to the show every single week. And, you know, I know that the majority of my listeners don't listen on Monday night, but they open their downloads during the week, and I know they mow their lawn, and they listen to it in the car, and, you know, they lay on the boat and listen to it. It is really an opportunity for people to listen at their own convenience. And wow, I can't say enough about that. Because when you listen at your own convenience, you know, you give it the time that you deserve to. And this is a field that, you know, it takes a while to get really, really healthy. It really is important for most people to dissect the information and not only so that they know what they're hearing, but to decide how does it apply to them. You know, that's why groups are so effective. You know, oftentimes, when somebody is in a group and they hear somebody else talking about their life, they oftentimes, they get so much out of the group as another person talks because they go, hey, that's me too. And that is exactly why groups are effective. Okay, and tonight I have Michael Morton. He comes from Keystone Center in Pennsylvania. And we're hoping that Michael will call 646-595-3284. 646-595-3284. That's the number to call. You know, it oftentimes can get really confusing when you don't know what books to buy and you don't know who to listen to and you don't know what treatment centers actually have the best program. And I can always be a resource for you. The good news is that I know a lot about treatment centers all over the country. And that is why I oftentimes say, you know, I am a part of a listserv. And that listserv is 1,600 people strong. And when people, you know, the professionals that all work together, When I am working with them, I can ask them a question. I can say, hey, who's the best person out in Carlsbad, California to treat this kind of condition? and, hey, which treatment center takes Aetna insurance? Or what do you do if no insurance is applicable? How can my clients get the information that they really need? It can get very, very confusing. And having that resource of all those people, wow, you know, all I got to say is having all those people available to actually help me make decisions, I am really, really blessed. So you don't have to do all the work. I'm happy to do some of it for you. That's what I do. Okay. And I know Michael's going to be calling in here in a second because he's got a lot of information to share with everybody about family therapy and sexual addiction. And so I am going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will be talking to Michael Morton.
Carol the Coach, sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach, compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people. Every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, for children. How do you feel?
How do you deal with lower sexual libido, especially if you've had some sexual addiction problems? That's the question that we all have to talk about. And you have to find somebody who's specialized in that, because let's face it, talking about sex is difficult. But when you have a sexual addiction and you're trying to figure out, you know, what works and what doesn't, and if it doesn't, because you've trained your brain to look at porn, then how do you rebuild the brain? And so that's why you've got to work with the CSAT. And again, if you want a CSAT, you got to go to sexhelp.com, and then you got to put in your zip code, and that will absolutely help you and assist you in being able to find the right person with the specialty that you need. And now I am so pleased to have Michael Morton on the line. You know, Michael is the director of Keystone Center, and he's going to be discussing, when do you use family therapy with sexual addiction? What are the limitations and the benefits of outpatient and inpatient family therapy? And he's going to be talking about boundaries and all sorts of things that absolutely apply to you if you've been wanting to work with your wife, your husband, your family in family therapy. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes. This is an interesting topic, family therapy. So I'd kind of like to ask you, just kind of get the grassroots of what initially got you interested in sexual addiction, and then why family therapy?
Well, sexual addiction to me was so prevalent, and then talking about 30-some years ago, when I worked with chemical addictions, And mental health issues, and I also taught high school for 6 years. And what I realized, in particular, I happened to have taught in a religious high school and worked with a lot of clergy and religious. And it seemed to me that while alcoholism was a significant factor, that sexuality was a very huge piece of that. And it was sometimes difficult to tell which came first for people and how those two interacted. But also, I realized how profound the family relational context was, not only from formative in my education, but also in my experience, both in being a high school teacher and also a therapist, and working under supervision with Yvonne Bourgeois-Mini-Nagy, who was a contextual family therapist and one of the pioneers in the field in the United States, and saw the connectedness between that. So that's how I sort of became not only interested in it, but convinced or convicted, if you will, of the importance of understanding even in treating the individual from a family perspective, and how all those different variables contributed to the sort of predisposition of a potential or an act of addict, and as well as other people in the family.
Well, that makes total sense. And obviously, you work for Keystone. You're the director of Keystone Center in Pennsylvania. And they provide family therapy inpatient. Is that correct?
We do. Well, what we do is we individualize the family component and have it could be adult siblings, children, spouses, partners, or parents come in and do intensive several days of family meetings and therapy with one. Both myself and Karen Martin are certified sex addiction therapists as well as licensed clinical family therapists. Mm. And so we tend to emphasize the need for a better understanding, a psychoeducational process, and then a dialogue, and then depending on where people are in their process, how far along they are, whether or not this is their first attempt at recovery, whether they've had outpatient experience or any treatment, or whether we're dealing with maybe even a relapsing situation, how significant it is being that the family is sober, available, and well-meaning to come in and spend that intensive amount of time. And sometimes we'll even do that during the first half of the stay and at the end of the stay also. People who are regionally nearby, they come in even weekly sometimes to work with either their family member or partner or spouse.
Now, if they aren't regional, let's say somebody from California came out to see you all at Keystone Center, then you might encourage them to stay a couple of days to participate in some family therapy?
We would. Once from the beginning, when the person's admitted, we make, with their permission, of course, an immediate contact with a family member. Sometimes the family member will actually come with them for the admission process and then leave. But we engage them from the beginning, offer them helpful materials, spouses, maybe the shattered heart or what have you, give them resources. Potentially, they may need a supportive therapist on their end, the partner or the family. So we'll give them the therapist locator for the CSATs, et cetera, and look for what seems to be an appropriate match. And then maintain contact with them. And there's some fundamental tasks that a lot of the, clients at Keystone do in terms of some written correspondence, which then gets processed in groups and so on. And then usually after a two-week period, the family members or partner or spouse are invited to come in, and they would travel in. Maybe they'll fly in the night before. We'll schedule the 2 days intensive, and then they may leave out the next day, depending on their availability and their, financial wherewithal to come and go. Some people will even do that twice. I've had a significant number of family members and or spouses or partners actually fly in after that initial two-week period, do the intensive meetings with myself or Karen, fly back, and then come back again before the end of the treatment process. And that allows, at least in my opinion, them to be able to grasp the gravity of the situation that they're facing, deal with their own understanding of their own family context, whether it's a mother of an adult patient or a client that comes in, parents, sometimes even grandparents, and or adult siblings. And so to me, it's a facilitation of a healing dialogue to kind of diffuse a lot of the reactivity, the trauma, and the pain that comes with not only discovery, but also the ongoing struggle of dealing with recidivism or relapse, if you will. And sometimes quite overwhelming. Yeah.
It is so overwhelming that I know that as a CSAT, I was obviously able to work with the sex addict and the partner, but I went and got certified training in partner training because post-traumatic trauma and complex trauma are very common for spouses who have had to deal with this at least once. And like you just mentioned, sometimes it's multiple times that they've gotten new disclosures and new discoveries. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think are some risks of ongoing outpatient treatment? You're talking about inpatient, but I just shared that sometimes we need people that are really specialized in complex post-traumatic stress for the partners. What are the risks are out there for outpatient therapy?
Well, I think one risk in engaging a family member or a partner with all good intentions or well-meaning is that they are once again being asked to present themselves and be vulnerable, which can result either in a reenactment of the trauma for them if the outpatient situation isn't careful in terms of discerning the health or level of integrity of the recovery. And so we've had people, one particular case I'm thinking of, who was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for many years, 25 years, mid-60s, came to Keystone and spent 6 weeks with us, and he estimated he had spent about $300,000 in outpatient therapy over those 25 years and had multiple extramarital affairs. His pornography use progressed. And I think it's not that that's not can and does happen to any of us, but it's an issue that one has to be careful with in terms of resolving trauma. And I think the outpatient setting oftentimes only allows for limited time, periodically, weekly, etc. The person engaging in that process may or may not be willing, able, or ready, or have available resources for a supportive culture, whether it be an S&M group or an ACA group or some kind of survivors group or what have you. So they're all issues that I'm sensitive to at Keystone, and it's one of the things that we do when a partner, especially when a partner comes in, is it's presented as a very traumatic experience, and they agree, and then they want resources, and if they're really open to the process, they also want to be able to figure out what they're doing and how they're going to either survive this or move on beyond it or recover themselves. So it's there's a lot. I'm certified in EMDR, and I trained with Edna Fowle at University of Pennsylvania in exposure therapy and such. And what I came to realize about almost 10 years ago is how little specific techniques for dealing with trauma many of us know. And all the more so in an outpatient setting that we have to be able to contain and help resource the person, et cetera, and make sure that they're safe. And at the same time, deal with the hard content of especially sexual addiction and what that brings to light for people.
Oh, 100%. You know, I am in my last season of therapy. I've just turned 60, and I have never worked harder in my life. You know, I got my EMDR certification, and I am getting my partner certification and hypnosis. Yeah. And I mean, I'm just really very sensitive to the fact that this is a population, talk therapy is not always going to be enough. And so you need to have specialized tools to help the person. So that's one of the things that I really have appreciated about you. I have sent several people to Keystone, and they always sing Keystone's praises. I mean, they really do. But your family program in particular, they have felt has been instrumental in changing their life, and I think that speaks to you and the curriculum that you teach out there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I think it gets incorporated that the tasks, the CSAT tasks, the family work, the trauma-informed art therapy, the psychodrama, the individual sessions, the step work, and then the meetings. We've also incorporated an ACA meeting on Saturday evenings that the residents attend. All kind of facilitate a culture, or a supportive culture of safety for people to deal with these things in the time that they're at Keystone, which also allows them, although we can't involve, obviously, the family members on that kind of intensity, like I said, we recommend that they have a supportive person like yourself that's seeing them and working with them, so they're also keeping at least a little bit in stride with the recovery process. That keeps it a little more engaging and appropriate, so that one person doesn't get too far ahead of the other in their process.
Oh, at 100%. And you have always done, as a facility, a great job of, if you will, being able to provide the resources upon discharge. You know, they're not out there floundering. They're set up with good therapists that have the specialty, or there are other therapists. We get a lot of information so we can follow through on what you all have been working with. Now, I wanted to ask you, how do you assess the viability of a marriage recovery after the disclosure of sex addiction? You know, that can be such a tough thing.
What I attempt to do, and what Karen does very well, is limit the damages really in the process by some prep work with understanding the nature of sexual addiction and what people do. And while not making excuses or trying to play down the impact, is for us, it's a normal day's process to discuss what other people might think is terribly horrific or unbelievable or unbearable.
Right.
And so the first thing I do is I suggest to people that you have every right to decide what is in your heart, what you would like to do in this situation. And sometimes I wax a little political and I suggest that, you know, our presidential candidate is sort of the poster child for being able to make her decision about what she's going to do after discovery and ongoing circumstances. And I think that gives them permission to begin to process this and decide. And then I think to answer your question too, I kind of like the four horsemen of the apocalypse that John Gottman talks about. There are some situations that one has, no matter how hard the therapist might try or even the recovering person, where there's been a significant amount of damage, which would take an awful lot of energy. And I think if in an outpatient basis, if people meet with a therapist who's non-aligned or uses a sort of multi-directed partiality and is able to hold that anger and trauma, really, that's occurred over maybe decades, if not intergenerationally, it allows them to calm a bit and process and come to a discernment about what they need to do. But to answer that question, I mean, if I think somebody is verbally, physically abusive, et cetera, one of the things I'll ask people right up front in sessions is, has there been any physical altercations between you? Has there been, you know, A, B, or C? Has there been severe consequences for the behavior in terms of disease or, you know, medical issues? And then sort that through. And once again, always allow, unless it's a severe safety issue, for that person to come to their own discernment about what they need to do.
Well, that's really good advice. And I always say you make decisions using your head, what you think, your heart, how you feel, and your gut, what you know. And when you combine all
right.
three of those, you almost always know what to do next, especially if you've got some support systems like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about the boundaries and limitations of a primary therapist? You know, that happens.
Yeah.
There are boundaries and limitations.
You mean you're asking about the boundaries of the therapist?
Yes, absolutely. Not the
yes.
couple, but the therapist.
I think in this addiction, and in a lot of us who treat addictive disorders, I appreciate the whole motivational interviewing process, which suggests that it's really the person's own self-efficacy that ultimately is important, and that we're willing to relinquish some control, and while we want to guide and facilitate and suggest, it has to be congruent with the person's ability and readiness and desire to be sober, to be in a different way with other people. So I think what I sometimes see is sometimes a bit of an overbearing control, if you will, of wanting the person to do A, B, and C, or telling the spouse of the addict that she must A, B, or C.
Uh-huh.
And I from my own clinical training, one of the big taboos was doing just that, especially in couples and family therapy, where you don't deny, but you give each person a side. You don't try to control outcomes. You facilitate a healing dialogue. And as the famous family therapist Carl Whitaker said, he said you want to decentralize yourself from the relationship and allow that whatever is supposed to transpire between them to help facilitate that. I do think there are times in this addiction in particular that there's a need for certain things to be said and reinforced regarding the healing process. And that's maybe important for people to maintain those kinds of boundaries. Also in terms of time, availability, you know, Dr. Carnes has that wonderful, he has a little list, a litany of the addict's will, leave things unresolved, seduce the therapist, et cetera. So it's really important, and I've done a lot of training actually with boundaries with therapists and people in human services. I do about 6 a year in the city of Philadelphia, and I spend a lot of time with that whole idea of how people get entrapped in the therapeutic process as opposed to the therapeutic alliance, and maybe even become somewhat part of the problem by not keeping those boundaries in terms of meeting place and time and staying focused. And Dr. Carnes will often say, you know, the addicted person will do anything to avoid taking the first step. And that's maybe that's a boundary for ourselves to stay focused on our goals and have the process, which for the CSAT is fairly well delineated. That process has these tasks, which are very helpful. And while they leave openness to some of our own personal ways of being and doing work, essentially it's critical, in my opinion, that we stay within those limits and try to help someone progress, especially in an addictive disorder, especially like sexual addiction.
Well, I think that is so smart, and I am glad that you're out there helping other therapists to understand some of the traps that one can get into, and also helping clients to know, you know, when they may feel addicted to the therapy or the therapist,
yep,
and yet they're not getting much traction or they're staying the same. As a matter of fact, if you don't mind right now, I actually have a caller who has been to Keystone that wanted to say something very special to you.
Oh, sure.
Do you mind? Yeah.
No, not at all.
Interestingly enough, this man was in my group, and he said that he wanted to come back to Alumni Day, and so I said, well, why don't you tell Michael? Why don't you call the show and let him know why? So I welcome Dan to the show. Dan, it's all yours. What do you want to tell Michael?
Well, I just, first of all, I would like to say to Michael that I didn't realize tonight that he was actually a teacher, because I know when I was at Keystone, I really enjoyed being around him, and I learned a lot from him just standing in the kitchen. But I didn't realize that he was actually had been a teacher. But, you know, my problem, I need to educate it. I need to know what I was dealing with, and needed to know how strong it was. And, you know, I learned that from him.
Oh, very good.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah. And you're gonna come to the Alumni Day, you think, maybe?
Definitely I am. I was actually thinking
about
it in group when I was supposed to be listening. But I not only want to do that, but I want to come to a meeting there. I've actually thought about just getting on a plane and coming to a meeting at the house. I wanted to come to the meeting at the house. And so this is going to be perfect.
Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah, we would love to see you. We have a couple of alum who live nearby who are chairing some of the meetings that we host at the ECU right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that might be a possibility for Dan, that he could actually go back to the place that got him sober and go to a meeting at the facility?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the ECU. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well, that kind of surprised me. I didn't realize that it would actually be there. That's why, you know, I was thinking that I would come to just the SAA meeting so that I could come in the house again.
Well, we're kind of getting the particulars all, you know, firmed up for that, and you can certainly give a call and we can fill you in on the details, Dan.
Okay, well,
go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was also, my thoughts today was in Carol's therapy group that when I was there at that house, it's probably the safest I've ever felt since I was a little boy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's one of the big things that I tell anybody coming in there I think you're right. It is, for once you walk through those doors, you're safe, and anything can be worked on or disclosed or treated, and I think that even goes for families who come in here and into Keystone. They feel very safe. and they discuss things that they would never touch with a 10-foot pole, as we say, outside. Yeah. No, I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah.
That was definitely my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing your testimonial of both Keystone and the work that was done there. I know most people think it sounds very scary to go to a treatment center, and you obviously are somebody saying, hey, it's the safest I ever felt in my life since childhood. So I appreciate the call.
Okay, well, thank you very much for allowing me to be on your show.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
Okay, thank you, and I'll see you in October, Michael.
All right, Dan. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, Dan is a very, he's 6'2", and he's burly, and he's tough, and he was scared to death to get help with this.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can see the transformation that has occurred, and the family program really helped that, too. If I've got listeners right now that want to find out more about Keystone Center and also about the family program, what should they do next?
Well, the website is one thing. At the Keystone Center Extended Care Unit, if they Google that up, it gives them at least a bit of a I don't think it does justice to the program, of course, but it certainly gives them an idea of what we do and who works there and a little bit of what it looks like. So that's certainly one possibility. The other is to just call, and there's always myself or several other people that are more than happy to talk to people about what we do. Stephen Bakampuso is there a lot, and David Pollack, who's a clinical coordinator, Karen, whoever happens to be available, myself, I try to make myself as available as possible to take a call. And that's a large part of what I do is just explain the program to people, whether it's a spouse, a parent, an adult child who's concerned about their aging father or, you know, his behavior, siblings, employers, sometimes religious leaders call. So, like I said, the one thing they can obviously do is look at the website.
That website is www.keystonecenterecu.net.
Correct.
And that phone number is 1-800-733-6840. And it sounds like you may get any of the people that Michael's been talking about today, Stephen, Karen, or even Michael, may be answering the phone to help guide you through the process.
Right.
So as we begin to wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to tell our listening audience about Keystone or about inpatient centers or about family therapy and why it's so important?
Two things. I think one is, and I tell this to people when they're discussing or kind of bargaining whether they're 18 years old or 85 years old, that it's rare to find an opportunity where one can enter into a residential setting and do the intensity of work to get themselves at least on the journey of repair and understanding and resolve some of the more significant or perseverating wounds and traumas, et cetera, as well as learn how to be sober and use healthier ways of being than the destructive ways. So that's one thing. I tell spouses and family members that for at least 42 days or however long, you know where your loved one is, what he's doing, who he's with, and that at least for today, he's in safe hands. And I think that is kind of the critical piece. And then the caveat of family therapy, I used to sort of jokingly say to guys in some ways, like, if you really want to get well, and some of the guys were, you know, in their 50s and 60s, I would say, bring your mother in here. And if dad and mom are both alive, bring them both in. That's the person who carried you for 9 months in her womb. and raised you. And a lot of times that's the last person they want to be truthful with or tell, and especially their parents, what's been going on in their lives, and maybe never did do that or felt they could. And so in the safety of a setting like Keystone, or in the healthy hands of a good family therapist, they can begin to be more transparent and disclose themselves and the struggles that they have with the people who they're really close to. So they're the two pieces that I think are very, very significant, especially in sexual addiction, because it's such a shame-based and alienating addiction for people.
Well, and it sounds like you do a great job of customizing the program to the needs of the client. I mean, I'm sure that there are plenty of other centers that talk about including significant people, but how you just said that about, hey, if you are having issues with your mother or your father, they're invited too. I mean, you're willing to do whatever it takes to heal the wounds in a safe environment to get people to stop medicating with sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think we have an extraordinarily nice luxury of client to staff ratio, which I think is really beneficial to allowing us to do some individualized work. And we do. And I'm not even sure sometimes that all of us at Keystone appreciate that, because it is a luxury to me, but it's of a significant benefit to not only the client, but the client's family.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that your treatment center isn't some big, sterile hospital, but it's really an informal environment with a lot of staff that's able to really work with you. The staff ratio is very therapeutic. And obviously that is a blessing for both the trained therapist as well as the clients and their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is that personalism. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I'm talking with Michael Morton. He is the director of Keystone Center out in Pennsylvania. The number is 1-800-733-6840, and you can get a hold of them by going to the website, KeystoneCenterECU.net, or just Google Keystone Center Pennsylvania, and it'll come right up. Now, I'm Michael, I got to tell you, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but I have compiled a book of radio transcripts from people that I've interviewed, Patrick Carnes, Claudia Black, mm-hmm. Ken Adams, Alex Katahakis. 12 mm-hmm. of us are in this book, and it is an ebook for $9.99. And I'm asking all professionals, all my listeners, all my clients to buy the book, because every bit of the money is going to AFAR, of course, the American Federation of Addiction Research. So I want to tell you that, too, and I want you to Google this book. It's called Sexual Addiction, Wisdom from the Masters, and buy a copy, and you can even download it.
I will do that. I promise I'll do that. All right.
Excellent, Michael. Listen, it's been a pleasure to talk with you and keep up the good work. I've got two alums that just speak so highly of that. I bet you $1 million you're going to see Dan in October. So thanks for all the good work you do. Absolutely.
Thank you, Carol.
All right. You have a great week.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. You know, again, we interview the experts, and, you know, Michael is renowned. One of the things Dan said to me is, oh, my gosh, you know, I learned so much from this guy, Michael Morton, sitting in the kitchen as he, you know, just sat with us and helped us to feel better. It's a very informal program, lots of therapeutic benefits, and I thank him for coming on the show tonight. All right, so you heard my plug about the book. Will you, as a listening audience, I want to raise $50,000 for research. I put in at least $1,200 to $1,500 of my own money to get this book going. So I just need you to contribute $9.99 and maybe even buy it for somebody in the program that you think might benefit from, again, sexual addiction, wisdom from the masters. You can get it on Amazon, or you can go to ebookit.com, put in my name or that name of the title. And this is the first week we're selling it. So please, 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 let's make it just an amazing charity together. And as I say to you all at the end of every show, that I want you to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. So I want you to make it a good week, and I look forward to talking with you next week. I just really appreciate that you listen in every week and you make your lives better. I'll talk to you soon. You're listening to Sex Help with Carol the Coach on Blog Talk Radio.